ordinary setting of the Court of Appeals. On my right is Judge Moore, and on my left is Judge Pirtle. Just a small housekeeping matter. I see we do have we have some juvenile cases today. So I would caution folks that this is being recorded and is being broadcast live over the internet. And what I will do, because it is being recorded, is when I call your name and once you approach as the appellant, I'll repeat the name again for recording purposes and archiving purposes. I'm not getting senile, or at least that I know of, so I will repeat it. So with that all in mind, the first matter this afternoon is In Re Interest of Alexandria. And Ms. Merwin, when you're ready, please. And again, for the record, this is In Re Interest of Alexandria, Alexandria H. When you're ready, please.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Diane Merwin, counsel for appellant Brett. He's the biological father of four minor children subject to this action. I'm here today asking you to overturn the decision of the Odo County Juvenile Court of May 18, 2012 that terminated the parental rights of my client to his four children. This case has a multitude of factual issues and errors, so if I don't hit the questions that you have or the issue you have, please bring it to my attention. I think I'm ready for those questions. This case began on October 9th of 2009 when the children were removed from the home of their parents. A juvenile petition was filed, and on January 5th of 2010, my client entered an admission, the mother entered a no-contest plea, and the children were found to be within the jurisdiction of the court under 43-2473A. The record reflects that the factual basis that was provided and what my client admitted to was domestic violence occurring inside the home and excessive alcohol use by the mother. At the termination trial, the mother testified that she was, in fact, the batterer, that she had lied to the officials and had forced the children to lie about those facts. Her testimony was not rebutted. The disposition hearing in this case then occurred on February 10th of 2010, and case plan goals were designed to direct my client to take care of his emotional and mental health needs and the needs of the children, as well as to provide a safe home free of domestic violence for those kids. In response to these goals, which were never amended, they were always the same goals throughout the entire case. In response to that, my client completed the services that were provided, those that were provided by the department. He sought out his own programs, treatment and services, when HHS failed to do so, even when he requested it, and he completed the rehabilitative goals of the plan. All the reports were positive regarding the father's relationship, contact, communication with the kids. My client separated from the children's mother, even got a protection order. They filed for divorce. And then on September 20th of 2010, the 5-year-old triplet girls and the 7-year-old boy were returned to his home with the promises of in-home services being in place. But there were no services in place, and that was testified to by the next case manager that took on the case in November and had testified that there were no services in place at the time that she took on the case, a month and a half after the children were returned home.
pardon me. How do you respond to a question that says, well, he should have taken some initiative to try and instigate or initiate, rather, services?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that my client did. He did remain in contact with them. He also sought out his own personal resources by his sisters who were involved in the case as foster parents at various times. So he did attempt to do so. In addition, he did go out and seek, during this time where there was no services in the home, he went out and sought a new pain specialist. My client suffers from failed back syndrome, facet syndrome, myofascial pain syndrome, multiple sclerosis, and has been on pain medications for years because of it. So he sought out a new pain specialist, Dr. Kurt Gold, in October of 2010, shortly after the children were returned to him. He did this because he was attempting to switch the medications from the highly addictive and euphoric producing Oxycontin to methadone, which does not have the same addictive qualities or the euphoria, and my client felt that that was probably going to be better for him and the children in the long run, so he sought out this professional and began to see him. Obviously, I can't explain all of the medical terminology the way Dr. Gold did, so I'd ask you to review his testimony in that regard, but essentially what occurred then is between the end of October and December, while my client was trying to do this adjustment on the pain medications, he was struggling with that. He didn't have adequate pain management, as testified to by the doctor. And unfortunately, my client misused his pain medications, took a couple extra methadones as the week went on during this period of time, and then when he ran out of medications, he drank alcohol. This was in the fall of 2010. My client admitted to this when he was asked about what had happened. The decision was made then by KBC or HHS, I'm not sure who was in charge at the time, but they made the decision to remove the children again from his care. The children at the time, they were actually removed. I mean, the time that happened, they weren't even in the home. They were at school, my client had been drinking at home, and that's when this all came about. Dr. Gold also testified and explained that my client is not an addict in the traditional sense. He has what's called a pseudo-addiction. We asked him to explain that, and essentially he's not an addict that's seeking out the high or the lifestyle of an addict. He was dealing with the pain. Dr. Gold also testified that as of this all occurred and the removal was in December of 2010, January 2011, they finally got the medications so that they were correct. The termination trial occurred in March and April of 2012, so over a year later.
Was he still under treatment by Dr. Gold at the time of the trial?
He was. And at the time of that trial, Dr. Gold testified that since January 2011 and the time of the trial, there had been no concerns with my client, that he had maintained sobriety other than the methadone that would always obviously show up.
Was there a concern that he had not completed intensive treatment after the, and I'll just use the word relapse loosely, but it's been referred to that from December of 2010?
At the termination trial, there was a concern raised regarding that. Prior to that, no. My client had sought out, after the quote-unquote relapse, my client sought out another evaluation, and that evaluation was through Allegiant Health. He did complete some outpatient, and I don't know if the actual terminology they used, but he was completing outpatient treatment with a Christy Cloyd. And at the time of the termination trial, we had, in preparation of that, attempted to get records from Christy Cloyd. She was no longer providing services at Allegiant, couldn't be found, so nobody knows really their perspective on the end of the treatment. My client's perspective of the end of the treatment was Christy had indicated he was done with the treatment. So there's some question about that, but it wasn't brought up till the trial. Now, essentially, after removal of the children in December of 2010, there was no showing of any further use or any failures by my client on any part. There were no services offered other than a supervised visit once every 2 weeks for an hour for any given child. There were no safety concerns that were ever noted during those visits. These visits continued in this limited capacity for 10 months, despite there were no safety concerns. And when asked at the termination trial why this wasn't expanded, the case manager testified that it was because there was a court order saying there should be supervised visits. But there was no court order that said supervised visits for only an hour every couple weeks with your kid. So that was her reasoning. She also testified that she knew she wasn't following the guidelines that the department suggests for children of that age with contact with their children. Throughout this whole time, the permanency objective remained reunification, but there was absolutely no services being provided, and this visitation was so limited. In addition to that testimony, ironically, the case manager then turned around and said, well, I stopped visits in October of 2011 because KBC decided to, but there was no court order to do that. So she needed to follow the court order earlier, not later. I'm not certain.
Counsel, did the father have an amiable relationship with his sister who had the children?
Yes, I mean, it was tenuous at times.
And was there any testimony about possible adoption?
There was some testimony. There was some, for a while there, my client was considering a relinquishment, and so there was testimony about that. What happened in that regard is the case manager had indicated that she, that the parents had relinquished, and in fact they hadn't, and that was during the time there was no contact, and then she indicated to my client that it was up to the foster parents when he could have contact, so he waited and waited until he realized it wasn't coming. I'm going to reserve my last 50 seconds.
Thank you. Is it Mr. Norlinger?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Afternoon, judges. My name is Tim Norlinger. I'm the Deputy Odo County Attorney. I'm the attorney for the appellee in this case. You've heard Ms. Merwin's argument on the case. I'm going to point out what I think the pertinent facts are in the Bill of Exceptions. I have a different view and slant to the facts, at least, than Ms. Merwin. The facts of this case involve an incident where on October 1st, 2009, where Ms. Merwin's client, the father of four minor children in interest in this case, was arrested by Sergeant Bando from the Nebraska City Police Department for domestic violence. At the termination hearing, Sergeant Bando testified that the father at that time was rambling and incoherent, and that he had an odor of an alcoholic beverage when he was being taken into custody. He interviewed the mother of the children, who subsequently relinquished, but was the victim in the October 1st, 2009 incident based on the adjudication. And she said that the father had pushed her to the ground in front of their minor children after a verbal argument. The children also were able to recite the same facts to another officer present at the scene.
Had there been any prior domestic
violence? There had been prior domestic violence in the home, Your Honor. The Bill of Exceptions will include testimony from Sergeant Bando. I recall specifically at least one incident in April of 2009 where Mr. Huss had been convicted of disturbing the peace after being initially charged with third-degree domestic assault. Now, the children also disclosed at that time that the parents often drank inside the home. The case was adjudicated, as Ms. Merwin noted, based on the father's admission and the mother's no contest plea at the entry of plea hearing. Part of the initial disposition in the case included that Mr. Huss complete a 90-day inpatient treatment for substance abuse at the campus of Hope in Omaha, Douglas County, Nebraska, in early 2010. He did complete that successfully, went through AA, and continued to then go through a 12-step program as part of that.
After the one relapse, I believe it was in 2010, was there any other evidence of any other alcohol or drug problems after that?
There were no positive tests after that removal in December of 2010 when the children were present. Mr. Huss, as Ms. Merwin noted, was going to Allegiant Health in Omaha, and it's my contention, if you'll, that Mr. Huss did not complete that treatment successfully, that he was referred for further inpatient treatment to Blue Valley and Auburn to complete his treatment, and he never did so. I think that's contained in Exhibit 39. Now, in 2010, the children were reunited only with the father, Mr. Huss, at residence Elkhorn. The transcript shows that Mr. Huss could not afford that home on his own. He was receiving substantial assistance from his sisters, who were also assisting in his medical pain management at that time. Mr. Huss then attempted to parent those children. It's during this period of time that Mr. Huss has this relapse in December of 2010 that results in him having the children removed from his home. I think when you look at the transcript as well as that December relapse, you should look at the testimony of Wendy Moore, that is Mr. Huss's sister, who is the foster parent of one of the minor children, the boy. She noted that that on several occasions she found Mr. Huss intoxicated inside his home. Several times in the fall of 2010. She noted the first incident occurred sometime around Labor Day of 2010. She found him intoxicated inside the home again in October of 2010. And then there was one occasion after the Thanksgiving holiday where the minor children were left with Mr. Huss inside that home in Elkhorn, where Ms. Moore and her sister returned, found the children in the same clothing that they had been in when they had been dropped off, when they had left the children with Mr. Huss, and he was intoxicated at that point, and they took the four children home with them until Mr. Huss could again sober up. So I obviously think that there's a very different and more protracted use of intoxicating liquor during the period of time that Mr. Huss had the children inside his home from September 2010 through that December 2010 date. I also argued to the court that even though Mr. Huss did not have any further issues in terms of intoxicating liquor based on the record, he failed to fully complete the treatment that the court outlined by not completing the inpatient treatment at Blue Valley, which is also in the record.
Was there any, I want to say expert testimony, I don't mean it exactly that way, about the relationship between the father and the children? And when I say, and what I'm looking for is either psychologists or even caseworkers or folks who talked about
yes,
bonding and that sort of thing.
Well, Your Honor, there was some testimony on that. At trial, if you'll allow me to flip to my brief so I can get to the right point. At the termination trial, the triplet girls therapist testified, Victor Schuerman, and also Gary Stessman, who provided treatment for the boy in the home, the minor child, the older boy.
Right.
Mr. Schuerman, who's the girls' psychologist, stated that he believes the Huss girls were suffering from an adjustment disorder. He noted that when he would do treatment with the girls, they would often deflect questions about the visits with their father, contact with their father, which he thought was a defensive mechanism. And he also stated that the girls began to stop commenting on their father spontaneously in the fall of 2011, which isn't surprising because if you look at the record, that's when the visits stopped between the father and the girls in this case. More specifically, Mr. Schuerman stated that the girls would regress in terms of their behavior and diagnosis if they had further contact with Mr. Huss. And he went on to state that restarting contact between the girls and Mr. Huss would not be in their best interest. Gary Stessman, who is the treatment provider for the older boy, noted that Jacob had some stress-related anxiety about his father when he first began treating him, and Jacob began to, or continued to exhibit these same levels of anxiety after being placed back with his father in the fall of 2010. Mr. Stessman's statement was not as clear as Mr. Schuerman's about further contact with the father. Mr. Stessman stated that he believed placing Jacob with his father would not be in his best interest, but he thought that if it was possible to have some kind of visitation, continued contact, given the age of the child, that would be in his best interest. So, now, the things that I failed to note that I'd like to go back to briefly involve the period of time from January 2011 until the fall of 2011, when Mr. Huss was basically having visitation with the minor children on alternating weeks. One week he would have the three minor girls, and then the next week he would have the minor boy for visitation. Originally, all the children had been put together for those visitations. It was at Mr. Huss' request because he thought they were chaotic that he wished to break those up. And to be quite honest, according to the testimony and based on my reading of events, they never really progressed, and that's the reason that no further visitation was ever ordered. I will agree with Ms. Merwin that there was definitely an issue in this case in terms of how the department continued to handle it. There was a period of time where this case was transferred to KVC after privatization, and then went back to the department, and there was definitely an issue in terms of the case coordination. The father indicated he was going to be relinquishing his parental rights in the fall of 2011. That was told, communicated to the parties, and I think that's clear in Mrs. Itak, the case manager's testimony. But for some reason, the department was never able to effectuate that. Mr. Huss did not change or indicate through counsel that he wished to have further contact with his children until the late December 2011, early January 2012, I think, based on the record. So I think when you look at all the facts, Your Honors, when you look at the four grounds that the court utilized to adjudicate or terminate the parental rights of Mr. Huss, that the Bill of Exceptions does meet its burden, and the court was appropriate in terminating the rights in this case. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does Ms. Merwin have? Ms. Merwin? Please.
Thank you. First of all, the domestic violence, there was no program that was offered by HHS or KVC. My client did seek out some, at Campus of Hope, he addressed those issues on domestic violence. There was no incident during the case. He had separated. There was a protection order, got divorced. There was no issues of domestic violence. The move to Elkhorn was an agreement by my client with a sister for she had agreed to help with finances because he didn't want to uproot the children yet again. So that was for the children's best interest to not have to move them out of school districts. There was no reports. There's these reports of all of these alcohol uses, and all of it occurred when he was in the pain management time. But none of those reports made it into any court report in advance of the trial. Also, HHS workers, three of them, and Mr. Stessman all testified there is a bond between the children. Thank you.
Thank you both, counsel. You're excused.